So, Levi. This is the only time we hear about Levi. He's the same story is told in Mark's gospel and in Luke's gospel, and he's one of the disciples, and we never hear about him again. he's this mystery disciple. He doesn't get all the fame that Peter and John get. But he's mentioned here in Luke. What we know about him is that he's a tax collector. And so in our day and age, we might think, okay, well, that's your job. And okay, if you like numbers and things like that, that's probably a good job for you. But in his day, the tax collection system worked a little bit differently. Here in Canada, a certain time of year comes and we have to do our taxes. And so online or with papers, and you have to fill out forms and you send it into the Canada Revenue Agency. And if you're really lucky, they send you money back because you overpaid. If you're not so lucky, you have to send them money. Or maybe you just break even. But in Levi's day, in Jesus' day, the tax collectors worked for the Roman government. And it was their job. They might have a booth set up and people had to go to them and pay their taxes. Well, how do you know how much tax you have to pay? Well, I know how much tax I have to pay because there's all these math equations on the online software that I use that tell me how much I have to pay. And I just trust that it's honest. But they could trust that most tax collectors were not honest. And so you walked up and you said, "Hey, Levi, how much do I owe?" And he'd look at his sheet and he'd go, "Okay, well, you owe $20. But I'm going to charge you 40. So you pay 20, I send it off to the Roman government, and I pocket the other 20. It's a sweet gig. And the thing is, that was legal. They were allowed to do it. Essentially, it was like tax collectors worked on a commission, but they were allowed to set their own commission. So tax collectors were pretty much universally hated. They were looked down on, they were dishonest, they were seen as abusing their authority, because the thing is, you also couldn't appeal. If Levi said to you, "You owe me $40, and you go, "That doesn't seem right, I didn't even make $40 this year. And he goes, "That doesn't matter, you owe me $40. You had no appeal. There was nobody higher up. You couldn't, like, "Can I talk to your manager, please?" There was none of that that could happen. You just had to do, he had all the authority, he had all the power, and he could abuse it however he wanted to abuse it. Now, the thing is, he was also looked down on, not just because he was dishonest and he abused his authority, or people would just assume that about anybody who's a tax collector, but they were, by in the Greco-Roman society, not just in the Jewish society, in the Greco-Roman society, they were also really looked, these were the bottom of the barrel, these were the worst of the worst. These were people, they might have wealth, but it wasn't respectable wealth, right? They might have authority and power, but it wasn't respectable authority and power. And so the friendship circle of somebody who was a tax collector would essentially be other people who also were looked down on by society, other people who were also kind of the lowest of the low, who might also have wealth, but it was questionable how they came about that wealth, who also were the so-called, what the Pharisees called, the sinners, just a general term to say all the people that we don't like, all the people that are against God. And so that's who Levi is. And all we know is that Jesus walked up to him and said, "Follow me." And Levi got up and followed him, left everything, Luke tells us, to follow him. We don't know why. There's no explanation for why. My own theory is that there must have been something about who Jesus was, about his personality, about his something. Maybe he'd heard Jesus teach before, something like that. But for whatever reason, Levi says, "Yep, I'm going to get up and I'm going to follow. I'm leaving everything." And so then he throws a banquet. And he throws a banquet and invites Jesus and the disciples to all come to this banquet with all of his friends. Oh my goodness. So you're out on the street and you're telling people about Jesus. And you're saying, "Oh, you know what? Wouldn't it be great? Do you want to know more about Jesus?" And the person says, "Yeah, I really do want to know more about Jesus." You're like, "Excellent, come to church with me." No, that's not how it works. That person turns around and says, "Hey, why don't you come home with me?" Well, what if the person lives in a brothel? What if they say, "I'm going to invite my friends," and their friends are sex workers and drug addicts and drug dealers and the like? Do you go? What if somebody sees you? What if somebody in your church sees you walk in to that brothel for a meal with all of these? Ugh. Do you go? Jesus went. Jesus and his disciples, the ones he had so far, they went to this banquet. Now, it's interesting that the Pharisees, we talked about the Pharisees and the scribes last week. These were the people who were kind of in charge of making sure everybody stayed true to the law, who were the law of God, that they were truly holy, that they were seeking after righteousness. And they looked at Jesus and his disciples and they're like, don't you know that sin like that, don't you know that their sin is like an illness and you could be contaminated? It's catching. What are you doing in the presence of these people? It's not good for you, Jesus. Now, I think it's really interesting that at this point they were concerned for Jesus' holiness because they kind of already thought that he was a righteous man. They thought his disciples were righteous people. They were in the wrong place. Now, over the next couple of years, that opinion's going to change. They're not going to think Jesus is a righteous man. But for now, they think he's righteous. And they're like, what are you doing? Don't you know? Don't you know who you're sitting with? When we were all teenagers, how many of us had parents say, I don't know if that friend is good for you? Did any of you have friends who were not good for you? I remember the first apartment I moved into, I had some interesting apartment mates. And I remember my mom saying, now, Elaine, I'm not really concerned that you're up to anything bad. However, people might think, given who you're living with, that you are. And so maybe you should rethink your housing choice. And I was very rebellious at the time. And so I thought, people will think something bad? Excellent. Bring it on. Let me find how many bad roommates I can have, how many questionable characters I can bring into my life. And when I used to do a lot of ministry with teenagers, and one of the rules of thumb that we would tell teenagers was like, okay, show me the five people who are closest to you, your five closest friends, and I will tell you who you are, because we are impacted by the people who we surround ourselves with. And so the Pharisees and the scribes, they're looking at Jesus and they're saying, look at who you're choosing to surround yourself with. That's not good. What are people going to think? Right? And then they also had it wasn't just about their reputation. It wasn't just what are people going to think, but they genuinely believed that sin was contagious. And so if you've got people who are living questionable lives in the framework of the Pharisees and the scribes, if they're saying these people are living outside of God's law, these people are not righteous, they are not holy, if you've got people like that, then Jesus, it's going to be contagious. You're going to get it too. You're going to become unrighteous. You're going to become unholy. You better be really, really careful. Now you see, sin is a disease in Luke. Often it's seen as a disease that separates us out from God, that isolates us from God and from each other. Earlier in Luke, we saw a leper who Jesus cleansed, who Jesus touched to clean. And the thing is, the leper was isolated because of their disease from God. People who were demon-possessed were isolated. Sin and disease, anything that isolates us from God and from our community, all sits under the same umbrella in Luke's gospel. And so the Pharisees, looking at Jesus and disciples, they're really worried that they're going to be isolated from God. They're going to be isolated from community. In Luke, God is seen as the great physician, the one who heals. How? By restoring relationships between God and people and between people and people. This is who God is, the one who cancels out that isolation, the one who creates community. There's a lot of scenes all through Luke's gospel of people sitting around tables of food, because a table of food, a shared meal, that symbolizes, it represents community. And so you're sitting around, you're no longer isolated, you're no longer alone, you're part of a community as you sit around that table. And so we look at this banquet that Levi has thrown, and we see that Jesus and his disciples are sitting with all these undesirables. They're making those undesirables their community. And the people who were the good religious people could not figure out why anybody would make that choice. Now, one of the things that I noticed about this community when I was thinking about it is that there was room for everybody at Levi's table. One of the gifts you have when you have nowhere lower to go as a human being is you can invite anybody, right? Anybody can be at your table. Nobody's going to bring you down because you're the lowest that you can be. And so there's room for everybody. But there was also room for the Pharisees and scribes. That's incredible to me. They were there. They were seeing this happening. Oh, they probably weren't participating in the banquet, but they probably could have if they wanted to. Levi wasn't going to stop them. And I think for me, this is where Jesus chose to be, at a table among people where there were no barriers. Everybody was welcome. Isn't that good news for us? That when we want to be in community with Jesus, when we want to be around Jesus' table, everybody is welcome. And here's the thing. Jesus went to Levi and he said to him, follow me. Levi was probably sitting there ripping people off when Jesus called to him. Right? It wasn't like he said, Levi, listen, I really like you. You got to get your crap together. And then maybe you could be one of my disciples. That's not how it works. If you're sitting there going, you know what, I would like to follow Jesus, but I'm not a good person, or I have so much that I've got to get together, or man, I lie, I don't forgive people, I hate some people, I'm angry all the time, or whatever it is that you might be thinking, this means that I'm not acceptable to Jesus. So let me get acceptable to Jesus, and then I'll be his disciple. It doesn't work like that. It works the other way around. Jesus said to Levi, as he was, come and follow me. And then we're told that Levi left everything and followed him. Now, here's a question that I've had. And again, we're inviting you to ask your questions, put them in the Walmart box, the little white box behind that pillar there, submit them online. Our small group in the afternoon is talking about the questions that are raised. Here's a question that I've been thinking about. Levi left everything to follow Jesus. That's what it says right at the beginning. And then he threw a banquet. With what? Throwing a banquet is expensive. If you've left everything, doesn't that mean you've left your job, you've left your money, you've left your ill-gotten gains, you've left everything? How do you then throw a banquet? Doesn't it seem like it's a bit of a paradox, a bit of a thing like, well, how is this possible? We're first told he left everything, and then we're told he threw this great big banquet. What is going on here? Maybe he didn't really leave everything. Maybe this was just the word in English is hyperbole, is exaggeration by Luke when he was writing this story. Except Mark tells it the same way. He says he left everything to follow Jesus. And so what if leaving everything isn't just about leaving concrete things, right? When we look at Andrew and Peter and James and John, and Jesus went up to them, they were fishing, they were in the family business, and it says they left everything. They put their nets down, their boats down, they walked away from the family business to follow Jesus. But what if leaving everything isn't just about those concrete things? And the more I've been thinking about this week, the more convinced I am that we get so focused on the leaving everything being just concrete things that we ignore the fact that really what it costs to follow Jesus, if Jesus walked up to you today and said, hey, I want you to follow me, but you're going to have to leave everything to follow me, does it mean you leave and you become homeless? No, I don't think that that's true at all. But here's what I do think. I do think it means you are required to leave things like, I don't know, your unforgiveness for somebody who's hurt you. You're required to leave behind your own pride. You're required to leave behind your ego, your jealousy, your hate, your bitterness, any of these things. And so when I think about Levi left everything to follow Jesus, I suspect Now, I also suspect probably he was like another guy in the Bible, Zacchaeus, who was also a tax collector, who decided that after he met Jesus, he was going to sell things, he was going to pay people back with interest, everything that he'd stolen from them and all of this. And I wouldn't be surprised if Levi also did that. This might have been the last banquet he ever threw. But I think what's more important here is that Levi had to leave behind his dishonesty, his lying, his abuse of authority. He probably also had to leave behind the shame he felt as a human being because of his profession. And it's made me think a lot about what it means for us to leave everything to follow Jesus. See, every one of us in this room has been invited by Jesus to follow him, to become one of his disciples, to learn how to live in a way that Jesus lived, in a way that shows that the kingdom of God is here and is real. What do you have to leave behind to do that? Because also that leaving behind isn't just a one-off thing. I wish it was. I wish it was like Jesus said, Elaine, follow me. I said, okay, I'm going to leave all the bad things behind, and then I'm going to be a truly righteous person for the rest of my life. That would be great. That's not been my experience. He's constantly bringing up new things that I need to leave behind. You know, we've just, in the Christian calendar, we've stepped into a period of time called Lent. Lent is a period of time that leads up towards Easter. It's a time for self-reflection. It's a time often for fasting and for things like that. And I think it's a time for leaving behind. I think that it's a time to consider, what is it that Jesus is asking me to leave behind so that I can follow him? Let me tell you what I don't think Levi was asked to leave behind: his friends, his people, to become more with the holy people. I think if we follow Jesus, we follow Jesus into places like Levi's banquet. But we have to be humble to do that. We have to let go of our bitterness, our anger, our hate, our jealousy, our pride. I don't know. What do you have to let go of? What do you have to leave behind as you follow Jesus?